Good evening, and welcome to Thursday Night Tailgate, where NFL legends live. Join us tonight as we get more legendary stories from former players and coaches who were in the huddles, on the sidelines, and in the locker room. Plus insights from media members from around the country who have covered the game for decades. Check out our five-star picks of the week with former Patriots Pro Bowl running back Tony Collins. Plus, our spotlight on the positive segment. And here are some good things for a change about what players and teams are doing in their communities. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazeri. Go get them, guys!
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Thursday Night Tailgate, where your favorite NFL legends live. Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazeri here with you. We've got another great lineup in store for you tonight, including Victor Green, Tony Collins, John Luke, and Gus Frerotte. So we're going to be talking Jets. We're going to be talking Washington football team, the wild card playoffs as well. But we're going to kick things off by saying hello to my co-host, Mr. Bob Lazeri. Bob, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Chris, and Happy New Year to everyone out there and to you and your family, Christopher.
I appreciate you, sir. Happy New Year right back at you. How are things up in Eastern Connecticut?
Well, it's winter in New England. Same old. You know, we're at 25 degrees or so, and we're just looking at the long-term forecast, and it looks clear and cold, and we'll take that in January.
No doubt you will, my friend. You know, Bob, it's crazy to say it, but we've only got four more weekends of football left. I mean, the Super Bowl is February 7th, so 31 days from now. It's amazing to me how quickly this NFL season, it always seems to fly by so much faster than we ever expect. Your thoughts, you know, as we look ahead, you know, to the first round of the playoffs, we got the wild card obviously coming up this weekend. Your Super Bowl picks are still alive. So are mine, but, outside of Washington getting in at 7-9, anything surprise you about the teams that are in or out of the playoffs?
Well, there's a lot out there, Chris. This was a crazy year in every way. We had talked throughout the season about the ineptitude of that NFC East. And I was almost hoping, and I have a lot of friends who are Giant fans, but I was almost rooting for Washington to take that division. At least they would have 7 wins. I mean, a 6-10 team to get in, Chris, that would have been a farce. And I know there's controversy surrounding it, but I'm almost glad that Washington, at least 7-9, just looks a lot better on paper than 6-10. So that was big. And, you know, I was just, you know, your division there with your Steelers into it, there's three teams, the only division in the NFL where three teams made it came from the AFC North, Chris. And that shows you what kind of way the football season and football in general has changed. You know, that AFC North was also always known as kind of like a defensive field, winning ugly type things. Well, all three of those teams that made the playoffs have scored more than 400 points. You know, this isn't like not your grandfather's AFC North. So that's pretty surprising, you know, and I was just shocked, of course, like a lot of other people. Not that Miami didn't beat Buffalo, but they didn't show up, Chris. For any team who had a playoff berth on the line to give up more than 50 points to any team out there was pretty bad. And I feel sorry for a lot of our Miami friends who are fans. But, you know, things are looking up for them with the draft picks coming and things like that, but that was a brutal way for Miami's season to end. And, you know, I mean, a team like Indy, who people thought were on the ropes for a while, I'm glad they got in at 11-5. They truly deserve it.
Surprised at all, Bob, that not only did the Patriots not make the playoffs, but they didn't even finish 500. I mean, when you look at how that team finished out the season, concern, thoughts? What do you think the future of the Patriots looks like?
Well, I think at the beginning of this season, I thought you know, I thought they'd have a down year, but I thought they might finish 9-7. I think I was on record saying that on a radio station earlier in the season. But 7-9, yeah, no matter what personnel they had, I didn't think they could possibly be under 500 with this team. I don't think anybody could have guessed that Cam Newton would be as bad as he was. That's probably the reason why. You know, and it's not all on Cam Newton. I mean, Edelman was down for a long time, and this team, they have a lot more work to do to get back to anywhere close to where they were, Chris. But 7-9 there, and to have given up more points than they scored, that's just crazy. I did not think Brady leaving would leave the team in shambles, but it is. But they have a lot of things to look at it this offseason. You know, I put a poll out on Twitter last weekend, Chris, and I asked, you know, what quarterback situation might we see in New England? You know, the choices were, you know, maybe Jimmy Garoppolo, possibly another NFL veteran employed by another team, or a college draft pick. Well, I think it was more than 700 votes, and more than 60% of them, I think, thought that another NFL veteran, not named Garoppolo, would be their quarterback next year. And that brings us to a bunch of other names that we may mention later in the show, but they have a lot of answers there. And this is uncharted territory for New England to be talking like this in January.
What are your thoughts on the Houston Texans, Bob? I mean, a team that went 4-12. I certainly, you know, would have thought that they were going to be a team that fought for a division title. And obviously losing D-Hop was a big deal at wide receiver, but I thought they had enough talent to still be competitive. 4-12, they scored a bunch of points, but obviously gave up a ton more. And then we saw what J.J. Watt had to say about, you know, potentially some guys giving up prior to the last game of the season. But I wanted to get your quick thoughts on the Texans.
Yeah, and it kills Watt to think that his defense was awful. Only Las Vegas gave up more points than Houston, 464 points, and J.J. Watt's a very prideful guy, so that was brutal. But I know you were pretty high on him, and for good reason. I mean, you know, Deshaun Watson, it seemed like he was coming into his own, still a very good quarterback, obviously, and he's been linked to possibly moving on now because he doesn't seem happy with the way the GM situation there and the chain of command is right now from what I'm hearing, Chris. So that's going to be interesting to keep an eye on where, if you might see a trade there. You know, they changed coaches. Romeo Crennel, his best days are behind him, Chris. If anything, he's still a defensive coordinator. He was in a tough spot there. So that team has a lot of homework to do also, and I think they're not starting off on the right foot again. I think the GM or the owner wants a lot more say in decision-making or vice versa. So they got to get a few things straight before they think about what they might want to do with Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, I can't imagine them trading him. I mean, he's, what, 1 year into a blockbuster deal that he signed. I can't imagine that he would move on somewhere else. But, you know, hey, stranger things have happened. I'd certainly love to see him in a Steelers uniform. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how things play out down there in Houston. Yeah. All right, on to tonight's show. And our first guest is going to be former Jets safety Victor Green. Victor's a guy who led the league in tackles back in 1996, 165 as a safety, mind you, at five seasons, over 100 tackles, two others in the 90s. Bob, certainly looking forward to getting his thoughts on the Jets and where that franchise goes from here. Plus, you know, one of the themes of tonight's show is going to be essentially getting everybody's thoughts on Doug Peterson and his decision to pull Jalen Hurts in the fourth quarter last Sunday. I want to get everybody's thoughts tonight on, you know, kind of, is that breaking one of those unwritten rules, right? You remain competitive. You're in a game that has major playoff implications because if they had come back and won that game, the Giants would have been the division champs and in the playoffs this weekend. So certainly want to get Victor's thoughts on that. But a guy who has been a wonderful guest over the years, Bob, a great golfer too. So we'll bring that up. If you check out Victor on Twitter, you're going to see his background picture as his golf swing. So, but looking forward to having him back on the show again tonight, Bob.
Yeah, very, very, very good player in his day, Chris. 25 picks while playing with the Jets, New England, New Orleans. He, again, very inspirational guy. You'll see him post daily on Twitter, and it's just always a pleasure to speak with him, whether it's on this show or we've had him on the TV side also. So welcome back, Victor.
Yeah, he'll join us about 15 minutes from now. Following him, Tony Collins is going to be back to lead us through our five-star picks of the week for the wild card round. He'll join us about 30 minutes from now. Later on in the hour, another great friend of the show and former Storage Wars auctioneer and a big Jets fan, John Luke, is going to be back. So, Bob, not only will we get Victor's perspective on the Jets, but then we're going to get to hear what one of their biggest fans has to say as well. So I'm interested to kind of hear both sides, really, both of their perspectives on what the Jets need to do next. But John has been a wonderful friend for years, a guy we've had on several times here. And certainly we are interacting with on almost a daily basis over social media as well. So looking forward to catching up with him.
Yeah, you said it there, Chris. We've had a lot of fun bantering back and forth with John throughout this football season. Kind of at the expense of the Jets, but he's a very, very devoted fan, and he's not happy with what's going there. And he made that very clear in a lot of our conversations. So I'm glad to see him on here tonight. I'm sure he'll be fired up.
Yeah, looking forward to that. He'll be along near the top of the next hour. And then we're going to round out tonight's show with former Washington, Minnesota Vikings, Dolphins, Rams, Broncos quarterback Gus Frerotte. Gus is also a member of our guest Hall of Fame as well, joined us last year into the hall. Bob, tonight I want to get Gus's thoughts on Washington's chances this weekend against Tom Brady and the Bucs. Their defense is playing really, really well. I think they've got a puncher's chance in that game. We'll certainly talk more about that in our segment with Tony, but it'll be great to have Gus as part of the show tonight.
Yeah, Gus is on our Hall of Fame, not just because he was a good player and a friend, but he is just a heck of a good all-around guy, Chris. You know, one of the nicer guys we've ever dealt with. And we're just honored to have him back. And he always gives some great insights, so I'm interested to get his playoff predictions and what he sees from the Redskins. Or if I shouldn't say the Redskins, I should say the Washington football team. Sorry.
Right. Yeah, Gus will join us a little over an hour from now. So there you have it, folks. A lot of great folks is back on the show with us again tonight. A lot of great friends. We're going to have a lot of fun. So sit back, relax. Let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next couple of hours.
It's time for another edition of Bob Take. So, Bob, tell us, what's on your mind tonight?
All right, let's get into this week's edition of Bob's Take. And, Bob, I want you to be the first one to weigh in on what the Washington football team and head coach Ron Rivera had kind of your thoughts on the Dwayne Haskins situation. It's, an era now where, you know, you and I have been frustrated about some of the players, guys like Antonio Brown, Josh Gordon, guys getting, you know, not just second and third and fourth chances, but fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth chances. And it seems like Haskins got a pretty quick hook. Your thoughts on them cutting ties with Haskins?
Well, Chris, he only played 15 NFL games. His stats weren't that good. Now, if his stats were good, I think they probably could have overlooked a lot of the off-the-field stuff. But the problem with Haskins, Chris, and this goes back to the Washington team, you know, they got to blame themselves a little, because when he came out of Ohio State, there was administrators from Ohio State that weren't too concerned with his off the field stuff, but said he's going to need time to develop. The athletic people there said you can draft him, and he's a great talent, but he's going to need a lot of time to develop. Now, you know, 15 games in the NFL is not going to get that done, but you can't just fluff the off the field stuff, Chris. I mean, he's made some knucklehead decisions. You know, I know he's only a 23-year-old guy still, but it must have been even worse than a lot of us thought for them to do that, because I've seen other guys, stick around longer than him and do worse things if they had that talent. But again, if he had produced on the field, Chris, I think he's still on that roster. But again, he seems very apologetic, and I think a lot of us think that let's get the knuckleheadedness, let it run its course, and let him maybe a year or two from now find himself and either become a good backup or even a starter in this football league.
Bob, speaking of surprise moves, I wanted to get your thoughts on the Doug Peterson move of pulling Jalen Hurts, you know, his rookie starting quarterback, only in his fourth start last Sunday. But Peterson pulls him out of the game against Washington, a game where they're only down 3 points going into the fourth quarter, like we talked about, major playoff implications in the game. Puts in third stringer Nate Sudfeld, who subsequently throws a couple of picks. Eagles lose the game, allowing Washington to win the division. Giants at home. So, and also, oh, by the way, the Eagles, if they win that game, they're the ninth pick in the draft. They bump up to the sixth pick in the draft thanks to the loss. So, but your thoughts?
I have a lot of Giant fans, obviously, that are still perturbed, which they shouldn't be. I mean, 6-10. Again, they had their chance early in the season. They had a 10-point lead on Philadelphia with only a few minutes left, and they blew it. So I'm not putting, you know, my Giant fans, they're talking to the hand as far as I'm concerned. But again, this was you could look at it a couple different ways, Chris. I mean, Peterson, I do not think at the time that he did that, I did not think he said, okay, we'll go from number 9 to number 6 if we lose this. I do not think that at all. Hurts, let's face it, Hurts was bad that game. He was 7 out of 20. His quarterback rating was pathetic. I thought Peterson, you know, at this point, Chris, I think Peterson just said, I'm going to try something here. You know, guess what? If Sutso had come in and won that game, Chris, we're not talking about this. If he had done something good, we're not talking about this. Sudfeld had the turnovers, and that's why we're talking about this today. I think he had a hunch. That's what I think. And you know, going into that game, the announcers were even saying, Hurts has something to prove. I mean, everybody's saying Philly's playing this for nothing. Well, Hurts is Hurts, your future quarterback. And for that reason, Peterson probably should have stuck with him the whole game. You know, they got to find out what this guy has for next year. I think that's still up in the air right now. But, you know, again, if it worked, Peterson is a genius, and we're not even talking about his future now, but just that one move now, it brings in everything else. But, you know, looking back on it, probably should have let Hurts do the whole game. I mean, think about it. Maybe that day Hurts wasn't your guy, but on paper, he should be your guy.
Bob, one more before we get to our first guest, Victor Green, but sticking with the Eagles, want to get your thoughts on the future of Carson Wentz in Philadelphia. Do you think he's on the roster come week one next season?
You know, I'm on board with ESPN's Adam Schefter, Chris. He's saying probably not. You know, they're going to try to trade him. I think the relationship there is just fractured. They're not sure if it's a Doug Peterson-Wentz thing, if one of them should stay, and which one should stay right now. They're, in fact, from what I'm told, they're at the board meetings right now trying to figure this out, you know. And then, of course, we know there are some other NFL teams out there looking for an experienced NFL quarterback like we talked about. So it's not like Wentz would have no landing place. And, you know, there's a lot of money tied up here, Chris. But saying if I had a guess right now, I'm going to say they're going to trade him. I'm not saying where he'll go, but I'm going to say they're going to do all they can to trade him and keep Peterson.
Hi, folks. There you go. That's this week's edition of Bob's Take. And Bob, before we move on, talk about all the wonderful interviews you continue to put back out there from your Monday Night Sports 14 YouTube channel.
Sure. If Chris, again, we celebrate, you know, birthdays at times, and we put up an interview just like we did with Victor Green a few weeks back when he had a birthday. We'll put up his interview we've done in the past. Had one with Ron Kittle the other day, the former DH of the White Sox and Rookie of the Year. That's up on YouTube and up on Twitter. So, yeah, if you go to Monday Night Sports 14 on YouTube, you'll find all these interviews. And, again, we're always celebrating someone's birthday each day on Twitter, and there's an interview probably there 5 days a week. So check that out.
All right, we've got our first guest, Victor Green, hanging on the line. We're going to get to him right on the other side of this real quick station break.
You're listening to Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazeri, where NFL legends live on. Back to you, boys.
Hand me the loss.
All right, now back in making his sixth appearance with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is former Jets, Patriots, and Saints safety Victor Green. Let me remind you about Victor's background. He's from Americus, Georgia, which is in the southwest part of the state. And for those of you that aren't familiar with Americus, it is clearly a hotbed of football talent. Great players like our friends Kent Hill and Dan Reeves are from down there. And plus, there's a whole lot of other great players that have come from there as well. Victor started his college career at Copiah Lynch Community College, where he was twice named to the Gridiron All-American team. From there, he went on to attend the University of Akron, where he earned degrees, two degrees, by the way, one in criminal justice, the other in political science. He was an undrafted free agent signed by the New York Jets in 1993, and he played in the NFL from 93 to 2003, led the NFL in tackles twice in 1995 and 96. And in fact, in that 96 season, he set a Jets team record with 20 tackles in a game against the Buffalo Bills. Over the course of his career, he had 961 tackles, 25 interceptions, recovered 17 fumbles, forced nine of them, had seven sacks, and he scored three touchdowns. 2003, he was named to the Jets all-time team and has also been named the best strong safety in Jets history. And oh, by the way, a heck of a golfer as well. And we're excited to have him back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Victor, Chris and Bob, thanks for coming back on the show.
Welcome back, Victor.
Chris and Bob, man. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Victor, I want to start our time with you tonight by getting an update on your son, Elijah. Freshman running back at the University of North Carolina. Those guys had an 8-4 season, capped it off with an appearance at the Orange Bowl against Texas A&M. How do you feel about his freshman year? How does he feel about his freshman year?
You know, he feel really well. You know, this was a growing year for him. I mean, he had to, you know, gain some strength, you know, but the coaches love him there. And, you know, with the two backs leaving this year, open up the door for him being, you know, one of the guys next year. So we look forward to next year, and he's very excited about it.
Victor, I also want to get your thoughts on your Jets. Surprised that they let Adam Gase go after only two seasons there?
Surprised, relieved. You know, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, I thought they should have fired him earlier. Adam, you know, came in as a highly, you know, genius of offense. And, you know, I think, I don't know the numbers, but I don't think we averaged 17 points a game his 2 years there. You know, and I don't like to hire in the first place. I mean, came from a team, the Dolphins, who I don't think had a win the season while he was there then. So, no, I'm very excited he's gone. I'm looking forward to the next head coach, and I hope it's an offensive-minded coach. I would love to see the one at Kansas City, offensive coordinator.
Eric Bieniemy?
Look, you're right, Bieniemy. He's done a great job there at Kansas City over the you know, years he's been there with Andy Reid, and I think he can do great with this offense we have here going to Jets.
Are you sold that Sam Darnold's the guy? Is he the franchise quarterback, or are you starting to think that maybe they need to look elsewhere?
You know, if they had the first pick, you know, I've been saying, you know, I played against, I coached against Trevor Lawrence here in high school. My son beat them in the state title game. And so I had a time to look at him and look at his film. He's a heck of a player. And if they have gotten him, I would have said, you know, let's move on. But, you know, you look at Sam's career, you know, he's been injured a lot. He had, I think, TB, you know, had this COVID. He had been injured. You know, it's been a lot, you know, his offensive line has been, you know, not that great. The receivers, you know, it's kind of like when Geno was there, you know, not, you know, didn't have the supporting cast. So I'm willing to give Sam, you know, another opportunity. You know, I don't know if the Jets will do that. But I think he earned that. At times he showed great flashes that he can be a franchise quarterback. You know, he can make all the throws. He's shown that he is mobile. But I would like to see him with some receivers. I would like to see him behind an offensive lineman in a running game. And I think he can be that guy. But, you know, he's not a Tom Brady. He's not a, you know, Aaron Rodgers. But he needs that supporting cast. And I think if he gets that, he can be a good quarterback.
Bob, questions for Victor?
Great to have you back, Victor. Always a pleasure.
Thanks,
and,
Bob.
I want to take you back to your rookie year. You know, I was looking at that 93 Jets team, and again, Pete Carroll was your defensive coordinator, and I want to take you back to that first training camp when you arrived in New York, and here you see guys like, you have a guy like Ronnie Lott, you know, an all-world guy who's already been 12 years in the league. You see this guy in your training camp, and you're a young rookie. I mean, was it a little overwhelming at first, Victor? And talk about Lott as maybe a mentor and how he welcomed you on the team.
Man, it's funny that you mentioned Ronnie. You know, we just talked, and we actually been talking pretty, you know, I said regularly, but we talk often. And he just sent me a message and said, "Hey, Victor, as another year drone presents itself, I don't want to go without passing and telling you how much I appreciate you. May your journey be enlightened. God cheer, good health, good tidings, happy holidays, Ronnie." So, and I thought that was very, you know, great of Ronnie, who I looked up, obviously coming into the NFL and having the opportunity to play with him. And him and Brian Washington, I went up to him and said, "Hey, man, can I work out with you guys?" So after lunch, I started working out with the guys. I started standing up to practice with Ronnie and just learning, you know, what made him such a great player in the NFL. And as you see how I play, you know, it's a lot of how Ronnie played, you know, physical, fast, and just want to make every tackle. So, it was intimidating, you know, and that was one of my, you know, when I chose the Jets, you know, being a young 21-year-old, I didn't understand that, hey, you know, they didn't draft anybody. I just said, well, I thought that's a good thing. But when I got there, they got, you know, Clifford Hicks, David Tate, Kevin Porter, Ronnie Lott, you know. They brought in all these free agents. I mean, all these free agents at the time. And, you know, unbeknownst to me, you know, how difficult it was going to be for me to make the team. But, I stuck on those guys. And, you know, with that, you know, I showed some light that, I deserve to be there. And, you know, I wound up making a team as a free agent. And, you know, from there, it worked out for me.
And fast forward a few years after that, Victor, I'm looking at that, like the 99 Jets coaching staff, and I'm seeing names like Parcells and Charlie Weiss and Belichick and Carson and Crennel and Al Groh and Todd Haley and Henning and Mangini. I could keep going on. It was like a who's who in coaches. Did you know at the time that this was an incredibly talented staff? I mean, it didn't necessarily translate to a great season, but these were some hell of a coaches.
We did have some great coaches, and at the time I didn't realize, you know, the Hall of Fame coaches that we had other than really Belichick and Parcells. But, you know, as it turned out, and Belichick had his career in New England, you know, and all the, I guess, all the wings and the downlines that came from that, it's been amazing. You know, I think all the coaches that you mentioned that's been a head coach, as you know, on some level. And it's amazing, you know, when you get under some leadership, great leadership, you know, good things come out of that. So, you know, we had a great leadership of coaches, and I thought we had a great team. Unfortunately, you know, we had some injuries and things of that nature that happened early in the season. But you know, we had some celebrity coaches, and you know, I learned a lot from them.
Victor, I want to kind of stay with your playing career in 96. Jets team wasn't very good. You had Frank Reich on that team, obviously now the head coach with the Colts. I wanted to get your thoughts on what you saw with Reich. And could you tell the guy was, you know, kind of suited to be a coach later on in his career, because he's been doing some great stuff with Indy?
I didn't see it at the time, man, but you know, Frank and I had a lot of, you know, good conversations, you know, coming over from Buffalo. And as you saw, hey, he stepped in, I think it was in 92 when he stepped on for, in that playoff game.
Right.
You know, and we had the opportunity to play with him. And, I thought he just was a class act guy. You know, he was a student of the game. He was always trying to get better, even at, you know, at his older age at that time. And, you know, we had some good, good conversation in terms of him telling me, you know, hey, hang in there, man. I think you're going to be a great player. So he was, yeah, I didn't see the coaching part of it at the time. Obviously, that's something I wasn't thinking about, but I just knew he was going to be successful in whatever he did. And he was a great, great man. And I'm glad to see him, finally have some success over there in Indianapolis. And, I don't think they're going to win the Super Bowl in the next couple of years, but I think he's going to be knocking on the door.
I want to fast forward a couple of years to 98 in a game against the Dolphins. You had a couple of picks against Dan Marino in a 20-9 win in October of 98. You had a couple of, several games where you had a couple of picks, but this one against a Hall of Famer, where does that rank in your highlight film?
It rang high because every time, Dan and I are together, he brings that up, same as Brett Favre. So, it's always great for conversation when we're all together. Obviously, we always own the Dolphins. And so, Dan and I, we always chuckle about it. He's a golfer. I'm a golfer. So, but playing against, Hall of Famers, like himself and Jim Kelly and Brett Favre, who all play golf with and had success against those guys, it's memorable. I got all of them jerseys. They signed them to me, and it means a lot, And these guys, obviously Hall of Famers and great people, you look back on the career and say, I played against that guy. I mean, I have my son watching to this day, the great quarterbacks I intercepted, and he's excited about it, and I'm excited about it as well.
And Victor, to your point, when you have interceptions against the greats of all time, and obviously you played against Marino a couple times a year, you played against Kelly a couple of times a year, when you're that familiar with them, was there something over the years you were able to pick up on what they did that allowed you to get an extra step, a jump on a ball that helped you get those interceptions?
Well, yeah, when you I was a student of the game. I always watched film. I learned that from Ronnie. He was a big film watcher. And, when you play a team, twice a year and you watch them, obviously, before we play, I probably watched four or five games prior to that of them. So I knew what they do a lot of time, right? And then with game planning, it's kind of put us in situation where we can be successful. So, so that has a lot to do with it. So you don't know everything that they do, but, you look at formations and hash marks and things that, what they like to do certain things at, and it kind of gave you an idea like, okay, I saw this on film, and you can kind of cheat a little bit and make a play. So you have an idea when you play a team like that, twice a year and over multiple years, and you can, start and have some type of success. So that plays a big part in it.
And Victor, not only were there great players that came out of your hometown of Americus, but, Akron had some great players and some great coaches that have come from there. Jason Taylor played there. Charlie Fry went there. Dwight Smith, the former Buck safety that had a couple of pick sixes in Super Bowl 37, played there. Ara Parsegian, going way back, played there. Have you gone back to Akron and been at events where you got to spend some time with some of these other great players that are alumni as well?
Well, only Jason, the younger guys, I spent some time with Dwight, he's, not too much younger than I am, but, a little bit, but, I go back, seen Dwight, I've seen, Jason, spoke to the team. So things of that nature. It's a lot of times that, when I played, when they had things up there, I was wasn't able to make it. But the campus had changed so much. The stadium now is on campus, and it's always good going back there. I don't get back there as much as I want to or I could, but it's always good to go back there when I do. So, but it's a great place, and I love the opportunity I had to be at Akron. I could have gone other places, but at the time I was just, I was a young kid, again, from Americus, coming from Kampala Lincoln. That was big for me. I had Notre Dame, Lou Holtz calling me and at the time, and I had Mississippi and did Ole Miss and a lot of, you know, a lot of bigger schools, but that didn't mean anything to me at the time, right? And you know, I chose acting because when I went there, you know, Wes Slaughter brother was, you know, lined up and said, "Hey, you come, I come." I said, "All right." And so I just wind up going to acting, man, just on that, really. So, but I had a great time there, and I love actually my trainer Kevin is retiring this year, so I think it's in April, and I think I'm gonna go up there for that. Equipment guy, actually.
Bob, one more for Victor.
Hey, sure, Victor. Going back to what you said about being a student of the game makes me think about fundamentals. You were a guy that had a couple seasons where you were over 100 tackles. I think you led the league in 96. And it brings me back to what I see daily, weekly here, Victor, and I'm sure you see the same of defensive backs and defensive players overall just not wrapping up, short of these guys jumping over guys, which seems to be a new thing also. I see so much of it, and it must drive guys like yourself who learned from Ronnie Lott crazy to just watch this on a weekly basis. Do you see it as much as I do?
It's poor. It's really poor. It's sometimes hurtful to watch the tackling that goes on in NFL right now. It's totally different. And I understand that, you know, the way the game is played is different, you know, with the, you know, the head and all that. But guys, a lot of times, just not trying, right? I mean, put your head in front, wrap up, period. And I just think guys just think they can just throw their shoulders into these big guys like, you know, over at Tennessee, what's his name, the running back that just be bulldogging everybody. The Heisman Trophy, what's his name now? I can't think of him.
Derrick Henry.
Henry, yeah. Henry. You know, you can't, I mean, you got to wrap that guy up. And a lot of times that ain't doing it with him. But yeah, the tackling in the NFL right now is very poor. You know, when I see a really good tackle, I'm like, oh, that's a great tackle. But that's far in between, and I wish guys would go back to fundamentals, you know, what they're trying to teach these young kids now and youth football, you know, how to tackle correctly and properly, because right now they're going to hurt themselves. And you see in the Alabama game, guys jumping over guys, not just because they just go in there and close the eyes and just hoping to, you know, the guy run over them, you know, and you latch on and make a tackle. But these guys are too good, too strong these days, man. You got to wrap them up, and they got to find a better way to make tackles.
Victor, do you think that's a loss of the fundamentals of the game? Guys trying to make ESPN highlights, going for the knockout shot. Where do you think that all fell apart?
You know, I think with the rule change is one, and I think it's a lack of practicing and training camp. Right, you can't hit anymore. You know, you only practice once a day, and then, you know, a lot of times now, you know, with, you know, when I face you, we in pads every day, twice a day. Especially in training camp, I mean, we all, you know, sometimes on Friday, you know, Parcells got us going goal line, right? So we was making sure that we did the things properly, and now when they changed everything, I just don't think they get the reps that they need to teach the fundamentals, right? And I think that has a big part to play in it.
Victor, I wanted to get your thoughts as well on what we saw from the Eagles and Doug Peterson in the fourth quarter last Sunday when they pulled Jalen Hurts in the fourth quarter of that 3-point game, which had major playoff implications. If they had to come back and won, the Giants are in the playoffs, and said Washington goes, and they pull Hurts in favor of their third string quarterback. Was that okay? Was that an okay thing to do to treat that game like, hey, I want to get my third stringer a look, see what he's got, or did they owe more to what people are saying, integrity of the game or what have you? Did they owe more to that playoff game or that playoff implication game to go with Hurts the whole way? Do you see anything wrong with what they did?
Yeah, you know, I think it's wrong with what he. His statement that he said, you know, that he made at the end of the game when he said, hey, you know, we was going into the game, we want to get everybody reps. Well, that's not the time to get everybody reps, right? You has an opportunity to make the playoff at this point. And, even though Jalen was playing bad at the time, hey, you know, as we know as players, you're one play away. I can get beat for three touchdowns and come and get an interception and win the game, right? So you just don't just take your starter out because he's having a bad game, especially a quarterback. Now you put your third-string quarterback in. Now he got thrown two interceptions. Now you ain't got a chance in hell to, you know, to win a football game. Now if, you know, if the Washington lose that game that night, right, then what would you say then? You didn't even give yourself a chance, an opportunity to win in the fourth quarter, only down by 3 points. Yeah, Jalen can win with his feet. He can win with his arms. And he has shown games previous that he is capable of making some plays. He's capable of winning some games. He won from some for you. So I think it was a mistake by him taking Jalen out. And I think it's going to haunt him. And I wouldn't be surprised if he gets fired. I know they say his job is not in jeopardy, but hey, people said it all the time. Next thing you hear, they're out of there. So I think he made a mistake there, and it may cost him in the long run.
Victor, one more before we let you go. And you mentioned you play golf a little bit ago. And in fact, when people go check you out on Twitter, your background profile. What's that?
Got a 7-1 yesterday.
Nah, wow. Look at you. So I was just going to say, what's the status of your game? The status of your game sounds pretty darn good.
Yeah, I shot a 76 on Tuesday. I shot a 71 yesterday. So, you know, and that's been pretty good for me, especially that, you know, it's cold now, right? It was like 55 both days here in Atlanta. So I haven't been able to get my practice in there because it may be 30 or maybe 40. So I don't play a practice on those days. So that was my short game. I got a pretty, really good short game. My short game is pretty good. So I had 24, 25 putts, 25, 26 putts the last 2 days. And that was we had a couple chip ins off the green, a couple birdies that way. So, but I've been playing, you know, pretty, other than that, if I shoot 82, that's a bad day for me. I put it like that.
Wow.
That's a good day for me.
Yeah. Wow. Good for you.
If I shoot 82, 83, that's a bad day for me. So, yeah, I'm going to be in the 70s for the most part.
Victor, before we let you go, I want to get an update on your foundation. You've got the Victor Green Foundation doing some great stuff for kids here in the Atlanta area. Give us an update on what you've got going on there.
Yeah, man, I do. I'm having in April. My date last year. Obviously, got canceled. I'll do a Top Golf tournament in April. It was April 15th. I had to cancel this year, so I'm setting another date for that. And then I do my golf tournament in New York every year. That's where it's been really great. You know, Ronnie, Roger Cadell. I mean, I have some great guys come up there and support my foundation there. And we give money to foundation that support education, health and wellness and character. So if you are interested in supporting, you know, my foundation, you can go to victorgreenfoundation.org and look at what we do. And I think it's my eighth year now having my tournaments, and been very successful, man. You know, we gave $20,000 to Morehouse School of Medicine this year, so more African American kids can practice medicine. We need more, you know, African Americans in the medical field. So we were able to do that with $15,000 for that, that we gave. And, so it's just been a great thing, man. All the supporters who may be listening, I appreciate the support. And, we're looking to do great things this year.
Victor, let our listeners know how they can stay up to date with all the great things. You mentioned the website of the foundation. How can they follow you on social media as well?
Yeah, I'm Victor Green 21 on Twitter, and it's Victor Green Foundation on IG, and then Facebook is just Victor Green. So if you Google me, it'll be online. And, if you're listening, and like you say, we do some great things, and, a dollar from every listener out here can be a lot of money, right? Dollar don't sound like it much, but it goes a long way, man. And I thank everyone for the support, man. God has really blessed me and put me in a position that I can help others, and nothing more meaningful than that, man, for me. And my family and I, we're very grateful.
Well, Victor, we are very grateful for you and for your time and all the support you've given this show over the years. We can't thank you enough for being generous with your time again tonight. We hope you'll come back and join us again soon.
Absolutely, man. Just so you know, man, too, I've turned down, this is my first show I've done this year, and I since the last time I did yours, I don't think I've done another one. You get all kind of requests with podcasts and this and that, and I turned them all down, man. When you called, you know, I appreciate you guys. I appreciate you guys on social media, man, and I think you guys do a great job. So, you know, keep doing, you know, what you're doing, man, and just keep blessing your audience, man, with great people that you guys have on, and very fortunate to be a part of that. So thank you guys, man, and just God bless you and Happy New Year to you both.
Yeah, we're honored. Thank you, Victor.
Absolutely. Amen. Thank you very much for that, Victor. Take care. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
Yeah, have a good day, man. Thanks, sir. Bye.
See you, Victor. That's a great Victor Green, Bob. That last piece, and not just the last piece, but everything he had to say, but that last piece, very meaningful. That's a great compliment. So we certainly don't take that lightly. We appreciate that from Victor very much, and certainly all of his time over the years. Sixth time tonight that he has been a part of the show, and a classier gentleman you will not find.
Yeah, it's almost like we did the spotlight on the positive already, right, Chris? I mean, he's doing
right.
So much great things both on and off the gridiron, and obviously on the golf course too, Chris. I'm jealous of his golf game, but that's a whole other story, right?
Same. Same here. All right, we on the other side of this break, Bob and I will be back. We'll do our 5-star picks of the week. Unfortunately, we're missing Tony tonight. Hopefully we can catch up with him again soon, but we'll get into those 5-star picks of the week here in just a moment.
Hear your favorite NFL legends sharing their stories and insights every week right here on Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari. Take it away, guys.
When the door is locked, there's no way out.
Hi, we are back here on Thursday Night Tailgate. We are going to get into our 5-star picks of the week, and we're going to get into all of the wild card games, Bob. And let's get started. The first game, the early game on Saturday, is going to be the 11-5 Colts. Talking about Frank Reich, they go into the 13-3 Buffalo Bills. Bob, the Bills are a 6.5-point favorite. Over under 51.5 in that game. Bills looked awfully good this season, Bob. Do you think the Colts defense is going to be able to contain that Bills offense and come up with an improbable win on the road?
Well, you know, this everyone is picking Buffalo, and for good reason. I mean, Buffalo is the hottest team out there, Chris, and, you know, they're just, you know, for any team to score 500 points in the NFL, seems strange to say that about any Buffalo team, but that's where they are at right now. But you got a team like Indy put up 451 and actually gave up less points than Buffalo this year. So, you know, they may stay in this game, and it may be a good game, and, you know, two teams with very good records. I just find it very tough for a team like Indy, who you would have to consider a dome team, Chris, going into Buffalo in January. I know this year's kind of crazy and the home field means nothing and all that, but there's something about Buffalo in January that's not comfortable for other people. So it's going to be very hard. I just think Buffalo, the way Allen is playing, both with his arm and his legs, it's going to be too much for Indy to overcome. So I think Buffalo keeps scoring enough, and I think it'll be a good one, though. I'm going to say 31-24 Buffalo.
And, Bob, I agree with everything you just said. I like so much about what I've seen from Josh Allen's progression this year and the Bills' offense. And like you mentioned, you know, at the top of the show, absolutely destroyed the Dolphins last Sunday. I mean, hung 56 on a pretty good Dolphins defense. And when you look at Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs, they've got a great chemistry working between those two. Diggs led the league in receiving yards and catches this season. But look, hey, yeah, to your point, Colts defense pretty good now. I mean, second against the run, 10th in average points allowed. And, you know, the big negative, Bob, that I have a hard time getting over with the Colts is really Phillip Rivers. I mean, the guy's 5-6 all time in playoff games. He's got a 59% completion percentage in those games, 14 touchdowns and 10 interceptions in those 11 games. Now, you know, you say, well, 14 and 10, not bad, but you got to take it with a grain of salt. I mean, six of those 14 touchdowns have come in blowout losses to the Patriots last year and to the Steelers in 2009. So some garbage time, you know, touchdowns have sort of padded those numbers. I just don't like Rivers in the playoffs. I don't like him in any big game for that matter. And you know, when you go back to, you know, at the game against the Steelers, obviously that's one I watched every playoff. I mean, you just know in a critical time, in a big spot, he's going to turn the ball over. And he did that in that game against the Steelers. So, like I said, I like what I'm seeing from the Bills. I think they could give KC a run in the AFC Championship game if both of those teams made it that far. So, I'm with you. I'm taking the Bills. I think they win it 30-20. The second game, Bob, on Saturday afternoon is going to be the 10-6 Rams going to the 12-4 Seahawks. Seahawks are a 3.5-point favorite. The over-under is 42.5. Well, Seahawks have won 4 in a row. So, Bob, what are your thoughts? Do they make it 5?
Yeah, again, the way this crazy season is winding down, you know, Seattle is always the 12th man, and it's not a big deal anymore. And Seattle was kind of had a rocky finish, Chris. You know, they weren't smooth, and their offense wasn't as good as people thought. And Wilson kind of played himself out of the MVP race. I don't think they finished as well as they thought they did. But, you know, the Rams have even more questions, Chris. I mean, I know people who are Ram fans that don't even think Goff is the answer right now. As much success as he may have had, you know, they just about got in the playoffs. And going to Seattle in this situation, I just think the Rams have a little more baggage, shall we say, than the Seahawks. And I think Wilson gets it together, and they have no trouble with the Rams in this game. I'm going to say 30-17, Seattle.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. Pretty much very close in the same score. I mean, the Rams are another team, Bob, that I just don't – there's not much about them that I like. I mean, they beat the Cardinals to get into the playoffs, but they lost 2 in a row prior to that, including 20-9 to Seattle after losing to the Jets the week before that. And to your point about Goff, I had my hand raised, you know, in the air. I'm not sold on Goff either. I mean, he finished 19th, you know, in touchdown passes this season, just ahead of Carson Wentz and Mitch Trubisky. And neither one of those guys played all 16 games. And I don't think any of us would say, you know, those two guys had great seasons, and Goff's right there. I mean, he was the 23rd rated passer this season. Now, on the opposite side of the ball, I mean, Rams defense, very good. Number one in average points allowed at 18.5 a game. They were third against the run. Seattle's defense was fifth against the run, but, you know, 31st against the pass for Seattle. So you start to say to yourself, well, here's a chance for Goff and the Rams to, you know, get healthy against a very bad Seattle pass defense. But Goff hasn't thrown a touchdown pass against Seattle in either of their games this season, and had a passer rating of 61.6 in that last game. And to your point, typically Seattle, very tough to beat up there in Seattle. To your point about, you know, the 12th man, not so much this year with fans being limited at games, but it's still up in Seattle. I don't like much about what I've seen from the Rams, so I'm with you. I'm going to take Seattle 24-17 to get it done. Moving on to the late game on Saturday, we've got the 11-5 Bucks going to the NFC East Division Champion 7-9 Washington Football Team. The Bucks are a whopping 8-point road favorite, and the over-under is 45.5. So, Bob, can an under 500 Washington team shock the world and end Tom Brady's season in Tampa?
Well, you know, when I first became aware that this would be a matchup, Chris, I said to myself, you know, if there's going to be an upset, it might be something like this, because Washington, again, they're at home. You know that they have their moments on defense, Chris, Chase Young, and et cetera. And I said, you know, you could picture a scenario where Young might be on Brady and giving him some trouble. Whether they can do this for four quarters remains to be seen. But, you know, you have a team like Tampa Bay that's plus 137, their differential, as opposed to Washington with just about even. You got to give the Tampa Bay that advantage. You know, you could probably hold Brady down for a little bit, but he's the kind of that just makes adjustments. And I just don't see Washington being able to score with them, Chris. You know, it might be a little higher scoring than people might think, but and Washington's defense, again, they have their moments. So they might make this close for a good half, maybe three quarters, Chris. Again, there's going to be some surprises, you know, this weekend. And This may be one of them for a while, but I'm still going to give Tampa Bay that edge. And I say they pull out this one in a closer game than people think. So I'm going to say Tampa Bay, how about 31-27?
All right. So, Bob, you know, when I look at Washington's defense, boy, over the last seven games, they're only averaging giving up 13 points a game. And they're 5-2 over that stretch. And the two losses, you know, or one score game. So to your point, I think this is going to be a lot closer than people think it's going to be. I think this is a dangerous team. This is Washington feels like the team that, you know, if you let them hang around, right? Obviously they bit my Steelers, right? So, I just think they're dangerous. Alex Smith, you know, as we've said over the years about him, right? He's not going to lose the game for Washington. Logan Thomas, boy, I like that guy, tight end. He's certainly coming into his own. Antonio Gibson's a pretty good running back. Guy averaged 4.7 yards per carry this season. And then on the other side with, you know, with Tampa Bay, Mike Evans hasn't been able to play or practice all week, I should say. He's nursing a knee injury. So if he doesn't get in there, I think that's a pretty big loss for the Bucs. And then when you look at, again, to your point about Washington's defense, I mean, they're second against the pass. So we know how good their front seven is. And heck, their secondary is pretty darn good, too. Bucks near the bottom of the league in rushing. They're averaging just a shade under 95 yards per game rushing. Meanwhile, the Bucks defense is 21st against the pass. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of things that you can look at, say, to your point, if someone's going to get upset, I think it could be the Bucks. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to pick that. I like Washington. I like what I'm seeing from them. I'm going to go, and I got my Gus Frerotte Washington Redskins jersey on tonight because, you know, Gus is going to join us here in a little bit.
Right.
So I'm going to go all the way with Washington tonight, and I'm going to say they get the upset 27-24 over Tampa Bay. We got two more games to pick. We've got our next guest, John Luke, hanging on the line. We'll get to John in just a moment. The fourth game is the early game on Sunday with the 11-5 Ravens going to the 11-5 Titans. The Ravens are a 3.5-point road favorite, over under 54.5. So, Bob, Ravens are once again the number one rushing offense. But, heck, Derrick Henry, right, got over 2,000 yards this season all by himself for the Titans. Who do you like in this one?
Yeah, actually, Tennessee has scored more points than Baltimore this year, Chris, believe it or not. And, you know, it's just that the Tennessee defense worries me. And that's the problem. You know, obviously, I have great offensive players in this game. You know, Jackson going up against Henry, and you know, you almost think that these guys are almost going to cancel each other out. You know, we're going to see great things from both of them, but when it comes down to crunch time, who can stop them? I just don't see Tennessee being able to make a big stop in this game. I think it'll be a close game, Chris. I just can give Baltimore that advantage just because of the stellar defense they continue to have. So how about Baltimore 24-20?
Okay. So, obviously, these two teams played back in Week 11, and the Titans won that game in overtime on a Derrick Henry 29-yard touchdown run. He ran for 133 yards in that game. The Ravens, as a team, rushed for 121. And the Titans defense held Lamar Jackson to 186 yards passing, one touchdown and one pick in that game. So, to me, Bob, the key to beating the Ravens is do the best you can to contain the run and make Lamar Jackson beat you through the air. I mean, he's nearly dead last in average yards passing per game. The only guys worse than him were Tua and Cam Newton. I think it's going to be a close game. I think King Henry and the Titans do it to him again, though, Bob. I like him. If it came down to someone having to win the game in the air, both teams focused and controlled the run. Do I like Tannehill or do I like Lamar Jackson passing the ball? And I go Tannehill. So I'm going to take the Titans. The exact same score, oh, by the way, that you had. I'm going to go Titans, though, 24-20. Bob, the Sunday afternoon game has the 8-8 Bears going to the 12-4 Saints. The Saints are a 10-point home favorite, over under 47.5. Any chance the Bears win this game, Bob?
No. I the Saints, you know, they got Breeze back in time, Chris. Michael Thomas seems to be, I guess he's coming back or whatever. It just seems that, you know, without Breeze for a few games, it seemed like more than just a few, but they still came close to scoring 500 points. Seems like Breeze is getting a little more comfortable these last, these few weeks, Chris. And, you know, again, I don't know if I have the same enthusiasm about them that I did back in August. But look, you know, they're 12-4 and they're favored in their first playoff. They have a good shot to still get to the Super Bowl. And you wonder if they could really start gelling now where Breeze, I think a lot of us know that this might be his last year and everything. So I think they're going to just lay it all out. You're looking at I'm going to say a 35-17 win by the Saints.
Yeah, and I'm with you. You know, picking against the Saints in the dome is always foolish. Though they did lose twice at home this season, but to the Packers and the Chiefs. So, and they're not going to lose to Mitch Trubisky and the Bears in New Orleans. But I tell you what, you know, food for thought for future Saints games and the playoffs as we look ahead. When they go on the road, they're 1-7 all time in road playoff games. So, keep that in our back pockets. But I'm with you. I think the Saints, if Tony was with us, it was going to be a Tony Collins blowout special. I think they win this game 37-10. Last game is the Sunday night game featuring the 11-5 Browns going to my 12-4 Steelers. Steelers a 6-point home favorite over under 47.5. So, Bob, what are your thoughts? Can my boys get a win in advance here?
I think so, Chris. You know, Pittsburgh, these two teams are probably even offensively. I think they're points for each other. I mean, they're about the same. Just Steelers have a better defense. There's no question about it. Steelers are very, very good at home, as you know, Chris. They're very happy to be at home. I think they still have a lot to prove, you know, how they finished and how rusty they were. And, you know, I still think they want to get back into this thing and get that talk as if they're a Super Bowl type team anyway. So, yeah, I just think it's too much of a thing for Cleveland to go in there and beat them. So I'm going to say Pittsburgh, Roethlisberger plays very well, and they win a game 31-24.
Okay. Well, we saw the Browns, and they had a hard time beating the Steelers JV team last Sunday. I mean, the Steelers are a 2-point conversion away from potentially winning that game in overtime. And the Steelers won in the early game, or the earlier part of the season when they played the Browns the first time. They won that game 38-7. Now, the defense was much better and healthier back then, but the Steelers still had 4 sacks this past weekend without J.J. Watt and Cam Hayward in there. Plus, they get the inside linebacker Robert Spillane back this week. Browns are pretty nicked up against an offensive line. I think Baker Mayfield is going to be under a lot of pressure in this game. He's going to turn it over a few times. Ben hopefully does, you know, get the offense going, get the spread, you know, not just spreading it out and going 5 wide and throwing those little 5-yard hitch routes, but opens it up down the field a little bit more. I think Mason Rudolph showed that the Steelers wide receivers can win some of those one-on-one matchups. So I like my boys to get it done at home. I think they win the game 30-17. All right, we've got our next guest, John Luke, hanging on the line. We're going to get to John on the other side of this real quick station break.
Thursday Night Tailgate, where the spotlight is always on the positive. Tune in Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time to hear your favorite NFL legends, players, and coaches sharing their stories. Now back to Chris and Bob.
I wouldn't joke about anything else that happened to you tonight.
All right, now back with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is John Luke. You know John as an auctioneer for A&E Shows Storage Wars. He does a lot of corporate and charity auction events now. Going back to the beginning, he's from North Harlem, New York. He's a big Jets, Yankees, Rangers, and Knicks fan, maybe also sprinkling a little bit of the Giants, too. I had the opportunity to meet John a couple of years ago when he was here in Atlanta for the Super Bowl. He's certainly been around a lot of celebrities, athletes, and executives over the course of his career. We've had a great time every time he has been a part of the show and interacting over social media with him as well. And we are honored he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, John, Chris, and Bob, Happy New Year, my friend. How are you?
Hi, John.
Happy New Year to you, my friends, and maybe a healthy one, please.
Yeah, and
it's great to be
you.
On the show. I love you guys. I love listening to you. You guys crack me up with some of your interaction and some of the serious parts. You know, they're really good to listen to. And if you've had a lot of people I know on the show. In fact, your previous guest, Victor Green, because you said I did charity events. I had the pleasure of getting to know Victor and working a couple of his charity events. And a shout out to Victor Green Foundation. His foundation, they do a great job.
Yeah, well, very good. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah,
John, you talk about being safe. How have you held up in the year of COVID? What's been going on with you?
I wish I could tell you some exciting things. Basically, in New York, I could say I've been a little bit more than a couch potato. My last charity event was in March, and your next week's guest, Jerry Cooney, I had the opportunity of meeting and chatting with. Very nice gentleman, very smart, great guy. Basically, you know, I can't wait for this to be over to get back out there because, as Victor said, his event had to be canceled. Several events have been canceled, and I don't know if we're doing the Super Bowl event this year in Tampa. So it's frustrating, but, you know, that's a small problem to what other people have. So, you know, basically, I'm very fortunate. So have no complaints, really.
So, John, we got to get your thoughts on your Jets. You know, we know they finished 2-14, but hey, 1-2 of the last three games. I'm kind of curious to get your thoughts. Happy they won those two games to have some momentum for next year, or are you hating it because they gave up the first pick?
You know, first of all, I come on your show because I love it how you guys just give it to me, stick it there a little bit on my Jets. I love it. You know, honestly speaking, they don't know when to lose when they should. You know, I tell you like it is, you know, I'm a fan. I've been a Jet fan since I was a kid. I've also been a Giants fan. I had season tickets to the Jets when they were at Chase Stadium when I used to freeze as a young guy. But seriously speaking, they just should have lost all their games. Did it make a difference that they won? I hate to say that, but did it make a difference?
Yeah. And
they lost the number one pick.
Right. I want to get your thoughts on Adam Gase. You know, you mentioned Victor Green on the show earlier tonight, and Victor was sort of happy to see Adam Gase go. Your thoughts on Gase and them letting him go after only two seasons?
Why did it take so long?
Wow, you too.
Me too. And, you know, I live in New York, so I listen to sports radio in the car when I'm in the car. And me and 90% of the Jet fans, okay? Why did they hire him from the Dolphins? He was not a winning coach. He did not prove he could be a winning coach. He came with the credentials as being the quarterback whisperer who was to turn Sam Darnold into the franchise quarterback. Did that happen? Okay. Granted, Sam Darnold didn't have the tools at his disposal, but personally, Sam Darnold is a starting quarterback in the NFL, but as a franchise quarterback, I don't think so. And that's why Adam Gase was brought in. That's how it was framed.
So to your point, John, you know, the other question becomes around Darnold. It doesn't sound like you're sold on him as the franchise quarterback. Do you think they need to go another direction?
Well, can they go another direction? I mean, I watching the college games, Fields from Ohio State, which, you know, would be their quarterback pick, I would assume, or I don't know the gentleman's name from BYU, is it? That was a quarterback that's really good. So it depends what the plan is of the GM. You know, they have good draft picks. What is his plan? I mean, if he can get a good Fields or the BYU quarterback and a little help around him, I would say it's time to change. That's my opinion.
Yeah, Zach Wilson's the quarterback at BYU. Had a heck of a year, almost 3,700 yards passing, 33 touchdowns to only three picks. So, yeah, I think either way, it could be an interesting pick for the Jets. It'll be interesting to see which direction they go. Bob, questions for John?
Great to speak with you, John. We've had a lot of fun this season at your expense, but
listen, you know what? That's okay. Listen to me. That's okay. I've done a lot worse on TV, believe me. Come bring it on. It's okay. Yeah. Listen, I learned if I can't laugh at myself, what can I do? So it's all good.
Yeah, there. Just so everybody knows, there's a silver lining of the Jets' woes this year, and it was a lot of laughs between us. So, but I share what you said about Gase just off the top of my head here, John. As far as you know, when they signed him, I'm saying why is this guy supposed to be special? Didn't really like his attitude. I mean, some guys, and Chris and I have talked about this before, some guys are just made to be coordinators. So it's not necessarily, you know, a smooth transition to be a head coach if you're a successful coordinator. I think McDaniels is like, I think there's so many guys around like that. They just kind of, you know, go for the money or they want the fame or the ego. I don't know. But Gase is a coordinator, and I think we've put that to bed already. But I want to get back to your roots in New York, John. I mean, when you mentioned Shea Stadium, you know, I probably was there. I want to say the late 70s, one game against Miami in December, the coldest game I've ever been to in my life. I was standing in the end zone, well, toward the back of an end zone, but we were just standing, and I've never been that cold in my life. I will never forget it. But I have a lot of people that knew that I go back to those days, and we talk about Jets, and they know that I had a great admiration of Joe Namath, probably my favorite player of all time, and my idol as a kid. You know, I was a tri-state kid, and Namath was the man in the Super Bowl and everything. But you know, people always come back at me, John, and they'll say to me, you know, I look at his stats, and my God, the guy like threw as many touchdowns as interceptions, and why is he in the Hall of Fame? This and that. They have no idea what it was like playing at Shea Stadium, where the wind was like nothing I've ever seen. Burgess Owens told us that on this show. But I want you to comment about the whole Shea Stadium thing and when they played with the infield and dirt. And, I mean, that was something else, John.
Well, all I could tell you is I had to put newspapers in my boots to insulate from the concrete, literally, you would leave the game, you know, at the end of the game, your hands were numb and your feet were numb. It was like, I've been to Chicago, I've been to Minnesota, okay? And I know how cold they say it is there, and it is cold, but it's just as cold as Shea Stadium. It was freezing.
Mm-hmm.
It was a horror. But you know what? I love the Jets. I had season tickets, okay? I had the tickets from the strike season. Okay, no good, but I had them. I used to go. I had like 5, 6, 7 years of going to Shea Stadium. But you know, I have to admit though, when I woke up in the morning a couple times and it was just so cold out, I said, "I'm not doing it." That's how bad it was. That's how bad it was. Okay.
Yeah, the wind down there, Willits Point, people don't understand, John, what Namath did in spite of the wind. Again, that's for another show, but it really
but
was
you,
something.
You know what you could relate the wind to? You could relate the wind to Willie Mays in San Francisco.
Exactly. Something, it was that severe, and, you know, there's a reason why these guys are Hall of Famers.
Yes.
You know, and you mentioned all your other, we mentioned in the intro, your love for New York sports in general. John, is there a guy like football, baseball, basketball, hockey, when you were growing up that kind of started this whole thing for you, the interest in New York sports?
Wow. You know what? I was fortunate. At a very young age, I started playing ice hockey. So I was a Rangers fan. And then when the Islanders came, of course, I hated them being from New York. It's a city from Manhattan. You know, they were the enemy. I was in walking distance. I used to go to Yankee Stadium. My mother used to bring me there back in the Roy White days. So, and then, you know, as I got a little older, I could go by myself. We used to walk over there. I used to play football at McCombs Dam Field, which is now where the new Yankee Stadium is.
Right.
And so growing up, you know, sports was the thing. You know, I played football, baseball, hockey. And so, of course, you had your idols. And you were saying your idol was Joe Namath. I had the pleasure, you know, to do his celebrity tournament. I was the auctioneer. at one of his celebrity tournaments. I got the pleasure of meeting him, along with a Pittsburgh quarterback that won a few Super Bowls. Who would that be?
Could Terry Bradshaw? Could that be Terry Bradshaw?
Yes. Yeah. And what a funny guy. So, you know, I love, you know, growing up, you know, we went through bad years and we went through good years. I used to say, at least I watched the Rangers win a Stanley Cup. Now I think I could say, at least I watched the Jets win a Super Bowl, you know? My Yankees and my Giants, you know, they won a couple Super Bowls. The Giants are, you know, showing some signs. The Mets now have a new owner, so, they, you know, they're going to be good. So New York sports has been down for a little bit, so hopefully it'll get back up there.
John, one of the things we've been talking throughout the show tonight has been, speaking of the Giants, they had an opportunity to get into the playoffs if the Eagles had, what I'm going to say, if they had done the right thing and let Jalen Hurts.
I watched,
you know,
the
least,
game.
at least complete that game. You know, you never know what could happen. I know he did play well, you know, last Sunday, but they, you know, yank him in favor of a third string quarterback, sort of treated the last quarter like it was an exhibition game. I'm sure bitter rivals, obviously Eagles, Giants. Does this add a little extra something to the sauce next year because of what they did that potentially kept the Giants out of the playoffs?
To put it mildly, I think they're on the hate list. But again, it wasn't the Philadelphia Eagles team. It was their head coach. And personally, to me, what he did was disrespectful to the game. Because how could you possibly justify you wanting to see what your third string quarterback's going to do in the last quarter of the last game of the season? Is that really going to help you?
Right. Right.
I mean, if it is, so now let me know how.
Right. So now with both New York teams out of the playoffs, is there a bandwagon you're going to jump on? Are you going to look to upstate New York to get on with the Bills? Who are you rooting for?
Well, I had the pleasure of meeting Jim Kelly and Andre Reed. So, you know, listen, they're a New York team. And you know what? I would like the Bills. I'm thinking Bills, Chiefs, Packers. One of those three. Okay. I'll go for the New York team. I have no horse in the race. That's the problem.
Right.
So I'll go for the state in the race.
Yeah, at least you got that.
Yeah, exactly. I got something.
Bob, more for John?
Yeah, well, John, your horse, not to keep going on this, but your horse never got out of the gate. So, I mean, what's
Thank you.
Ruben saw the wound.
When you're 2-14, yeah, you just didn't run. So, I mean, but well, that's what we've been talking about all year. But, you know, I was asking, you know, if you had to pick a coach, maybe not a name of a coach, John, but what type of coach would you like to see there? I mean, Gase was considered an offensive quote-unquote guru, or a quarterback, Taylor. I don't know what you would call him, but, you know, do they need a defensive-minded coach? Do they need a guy that can do kind of both? I mean, what kind of personality would you like to see in that place?
They need a coach that can hire the proper coaches under him and give them direction, what his goal is, and he has to have the right coaches for defense, for offense, for special teams. That's why look at the Patriots coaches for offense, defense, special teams. They're all head coaches, or were head coaches. Okay? It's not just the head coach. It's the right person to hire the other coaches under him to get the job done that he wants. So do I have a particular person? No. That's what you need a guy to manage.
Yeah.
Are there any out there you know of?
Some of the top guys are like the offensive coordinator of Kansas City. Yeah. But I you know, it's New York is a crazy type of place, and you know, you're talking about some of these other guys coming from the Midwest, John. I mean, you almost don't know if they know what they're getting into here. So I guess all we can do is pray for the best. And hey, let's put it this way. They can't do any worse than they did last year, right?
Hey, we can hope.
We can hope. Yeah.
That's right.
You know, listen, there's no guarantees, are there?
John, you've talked about, you know, some of the celebrities and athletes that you've had an opportunity to do some auctions for and be a part of their events. Who are some of the most fun people that you've been able to be around, get to know a little bit and have some laughs with?
Well, let's see. I every year at Super Bowl, and I believe you were at the one in Atlanta with the Last with Legends.
That's right.
With Larry Centers, running back, Ed Too Tall Jones. I don't know if that was the one Vince Papale was at. He's a great guy, former Philadelphia Eagle, you know, Mark Wahlberg played him in a movie. Ed Too Tall Jones, great conversations with him. Done Franco Harris's event, really great guy. I mean, what's so cool is I'm a fan. I didn't play the game. But, you know, these are people I grew up watching and having the opportunity to speak with and the stories. I mean, I met Whitey Ford, okay, and became
wow.
friends with Whitey Ford. Yeah, I met him on a plane. I'm sitting on a plane. This guy sits next to me. I know who it is, but I don't bother him. And then we get into a conversation. I give him my card. He ends up calling me. Coming to my office, giving a baseball to my partner's son,
wow.
go out to lunch, to dinner. Oh, and this, I can't tell you the stories he told me. It was unbelievable. That's like, I would have to say Whitey Ford was probably the most electrifying gentleman to speak to.
So to your point, right. Have there been stories that people have shared with you that you could share with us, maybe one or two stories that, you know, really kind of caught you off guard and like, wow, really? That happened?
Oh. Well, there's one, and it was so many years ago. I'm going to try and remember. Whitey Ford said that he was doing a radio show about when Jackie Robinson stole home, I think it was. Playing the Dodgers yeah. in a World Series. I'm trying to remember. And Phil Rizzuto calls in because Whitey Ford says he was out. Yogi Berra was on, said he was out. Whitey Ford calls in. I mean, Phil Rizzuto calls in, excuse me. Phil Rizzuto calls in and says he was safe. Then later on, a few days later, somebody sends Whitey a picture of the infield who was playing that day. And Phil Rizzuto wasn't even playing. And I don't want to tell you what Whitey Ford called Phil Rizzuto, you know. So,
wow.
he told me stories that I can't share.
Sure.
That's a family show.
Yes, exactly. It's been a fun ride getting to meet all these people. In fact, you know, one of your guests coming up, Otis Anderson, I met him a couple times at a charity event and asked him if he could do any auctioning. Because he said when I met him a couple years ago, he was practicing to be an auctioneer, believe it or not.
Is that right?
Wow.
Wow. How about
oh,
that?
Yeah. Yep. So it's been fun. It's been fun, definitely.
John, one more before we let you go, and you know when you know Bob and I being Italian. Now I saw your recent tweet about your homemade sauce. Right, I guess, so we got to get your recipe.
my recipe. Oh my! Yeah, you know, I think the show is a little short for that. I mean, like we have to do a cooking show. Okay, but you know, I make a meat sauce. Okay, and you know, veal bones, pork bones, beef bones, and then you know, there has to be some meat on it. It falls off. You know, tons of seasoning. It's a family recipe, so you know, I can only go into so much.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay.
Well,
you know,
it certainly looked good. And as there's, you know, one of the things I'm most jealous about you for is not only the celebrity and the athletes that you've got to hang out with, but the food that you show every day for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I mean, even if it's McDonald's, I'm looking at it and I'm getting hungry. Every time I go on your Twitter page, you've got great food. So kudos to you, my friend.
It's funny. Thank you. And you know what? McDonald's likes it too. I only do this because, you know what? Listen, I'm a regular guy. And you know what? How many millions of people eat McDonald's? You know what I'm saying? But then again, I'll go cook my French toast special. So, you know, whatever, it's all good. Like today I went for Japanese food. You go on my Twitter page and you'll see Japanese food. So I like it all.
Yeah. So let our listeners know, how can they follow you on social media and see all of this good stuff?
Well, on Twitter and Instagram, it's at JohnLukeNYC. And simple, just Google me. There's too much of me. to tell you the truth. we haven't aired a show in the States in a year or so, but our show, Storage Wars New York, is still playing all over the world. And I have followers sending me pictures from Brazil, from Turkey, you know, here you are, you know, speaking Spanish or this language or that language. I say, wow, I wish I knew how to speak these languages.
No doubt.
You know, John, the problem is I look better those days.
John, it's always a lot of fun having you as part of the show. We can't thank you enough for your time tonight. We hope we get the privilege of catching up with you again real soon. You're fantastic.
Well, I want to thank both of you. You guys do a great job. I love listening to your show. You guys are so professional, and you're really good at breaking my chops, too. But I still come on, and I love you. Listen, one of the good things is I just tell it like it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes. That's what we love about you. You tell it like it is.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
But thank John. You guys so much. You guys do a great job. You know, again, a happy and healthy new year to you both. And thank you. Appreciate it.
Anytime,
absolutely.
John.
Same to you, my friend. All the best to you and your family. We look forward to catching up with you again soon.
All right. You guys have a great night. Thank you.
Good night.
Thanks. Take care, John.
Bye-bye.
That's the great John Luke. We've got our next guest, Gus Farad, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Gus right on the other side of this real quick station break.
Hear NFL legends, players, coaches, and media members from around the country sharing their insights and stories with us year-round. Here on Thursday night, Tailgate.
All right, now back with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is former Pro Bowl quarterback Gus Farad. Gus has been a wonderful friend to us over the last several years, sharing his insights on what's going on around the game, about his former teams, plus, you know, just what goes on in the mind of a quarterback, plus his support on social media and his willingness to join us anytime really lets you know what a great guy Gus is. He had an outstanding 15-year career in the NFL. He's a guy who worked hard to go from being a seventh-round draft pick to quickly beating out the number 3 overall pick in the draft to become the starting quarterback in Washington. He was selected to the Pro Bowl in 1996 when he threw for nearly 3,500 yards, back when the game was even a lot different than it is right now from a rules perspective, and 3,500 yards was a heck of a year. Gus is now the host of a wonderful podcast called Huddle Up with Gus, which you can find on most of the major podcasting sites out there like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Player.fm, Stitcher, Radio.com, and TuneIn, or just go online to huddleupwithgus.com. He's also a member of our 2019 Guest Hall of Fame class, and we're very honored he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Gus, Chris and Bob, Happy New Year, my friend. How are you?
Hi, Gus.
Happy New Year, fellas. How are you guys?
We're fantastic, thanks, my friend. How are you? How are you guys holding up in the crazy year of COVID?
We're doing pretty well. You know, my kids have been home off and on. My son graduated with no graduation from William & Mary, and he's been home ever since. And it's been great. You know, not many people can say their son go to college, and usually they go off and do other things, but he's been home with me And my other son, Gabe, has been home for Christmas. And my daughter, Abby, who's in vet school at the University of Pennsylvania, she's been home off and on. And, you know, we've just kind of stayed tight-knit in all this and not gone many places. And my wife is working full-time at West Penn Hospital and their Women's Behavioral Health Clinic. And she does virtual therapy and she goes into work once a week. So it's been crazy. We've been getting through it, but we're staying positive.
Yeah, and your boys being home, they took over your podcast, I saw, on the most recent episode. What was it like turning over the reins to those guys?
I actually loved it. You know, I just wanted them to experience everything I've been doing for the last few years. And I thought they did a great job, and they actually are going to interview one of my close friends tomorrow. They're going to interview Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's been a friend of mine since they've been little, and they've known him forever. So they're super excited. They're going to get to go on Huddle Up with Gus and interview Ryan, and we'll have that out next week. So it's going to be a lot of fun. They do a great job with it. They're very knowledgeable about the game. And, you know, instead of some 50-year-old guy with a gray beard talking all the time, I decided to put some 20-year-olds on there who kind of get a better following and kind of deliver to a different audience.
And it's interesting that you mention Ryan Fitzpatrick, because I wanted to get your thoughts on the situation in Miami. So maybe as a prequel to that interview, what are your thoughts about what happened in Miami? I mean, Ryan certainly got them off to a pretty good start. I mean, they were 3-3, but at the time when they brought in Tua. But he had certainly played well early on. They had won, you know, two in a row, three of their last four, and then gets benched for Tua. And we know Tua is probably the future, you know, of the franchise. Obviously, a guy that you draft that high. But it felt odd to me that based on how they were playing and how things were rolling and how well Fitzpatrick was playing, that they made that switch at that time. What were your thoughts?
Well, I didn't agree with it, not just because Ryan's my good friend and I believe in him. It's more of the sense that there's a whole team that believed in him, and they were playing really well and playing well together. And I think that, you know, when you have a leader is going out there and fighting for you. I mean, Ryan was 16 years in the league and, you know, last year for the Dolphins, not this past year, but the year before, he was the leading rusher for the Dolphins. And this guy put his heart and soul into the team, and they followed him. They trusted him. He was winning games for them. They had some really good players around them. And then they go and make a switch for no reason other than they wanted to see, you know, this is the guy they drafted. And I'm sure that Tua is going to be good at some point. But you got to think about everybody else on the team at that point, that some of those guys won't be back for the Dolphins. Some of those guys may never play again. And I feel like it ruined their chances to really make the playoffs. Because it came down to playing the Bills at the end, and the Bills really showed everyone in the NFL who they are and put it to the Dolphins. And I feel like Ryan at this point gave them a way better chance to win than Tua did.
Yeah, and to your point, Gus, I mean, I think that's one of the other things that I think about is, you know, there's no guarantee for next season, right? Particularly for the veteran guys.
Right.
Injuries happen, rosters turn over, free agents come and go. So even if you're on an upward trajectory, it doesn't mean that things aren't going to happen next season that, you know, sidetrack the team or derail the team. And it doesn't work out. And, you know, veterans miss out on that opportunity. And for, you know, guys that may only be in the league, you know, a couple of more years, that may never come back around again. Ben Roethlisberger's talking about that, you know, as the Steelers look ahead to the playoff run. There is no next year. I mean, this may be the last best chance you have. Is it unfair to the veteran players to do something like the Dolphins did?
Oh, most definitely. I played 15 years, only made the playoffs a couple of times. I mean, there's only one Tom Brady that gets to do it year in and year out. I mean, that doesn't happen to everyone. And I just feel like that what happened in Miami was a mistake. And I understand where the coaches are coming from and the owners You know, the way I look at it, even with the Steelers, right? If they don't go to the Super Bowl, the Rooneys are going to own the team for a long time. So in the next 30, 40 years, if they win two more Super Bowls, they're pretty darn happy. But the guys who are playing right now, it means the world to, because the average career in the NFL was only probably somewhere right around 3 years. And so those guys in Miami who had a chance to make a playoffs, that were playing really well, that had a good team around them, and because that the coaches decided they got to play the young guy, you know, it kind of dashes a lot of the hopes and dreams. I think that they could have, even though they won 10 games, you know, they should, the AFC was different this year. You had to win more than that. And so I think that Ryan, if he would have played the whole time, could have done that.
Along those same lines, Gus, and one of the things we've been talking about throughout the show is what we saw from Doug Peterson and the Eagles Sunday night, right? The substitute and bringing in the third string quarterback in the fourth quarter. Now, I mean, look, you know, Washington wins the game. They're 7-9. The Giants only got themselves to 6-10. This probably isn't a conversation we should be having, you know, with either one of those teams having an opportunity to get into the playoffs. But because of the crazy situation, you know, the Giants may have some guys that, hey, they went out and did what they needed to do. They beat the Cowboys. Who knows what happens if Jalen Hurts stays in the game for the Eagles throughout the fourth quarter? He wasn't playing well, but it was only a 3-point game going into the fourth quarter. They had an opportunity to win that game. You know, if you're a Giant veteran, are you looking at Doug Peterson a little bit differently now, thinking, I had an opportunity to go to the playoffs here, and this is sort of against the integrity of what teams are supposed to do? You're supposed to play these out. You're supposed to play spoiler if you can.
Yeah, if you can. But, you know, you can't put that on Doug Peterson why the Giants didn't make the playoffs. You know, the Giants didn't make the playoffs because they only won 6 games. And they had to play better. Obviously, they lost Saquon Barkley, and they their quarterback was out for a little while. You know, when you look, try to say that I didn't make the playoffs because of another team, I don't think that's right. Now, I don't think it's right either that he took Jalen Hurts out and put the third string guy in because he says he wanted to see what he was made of. I think it happened all season with the Eagles, right? They have good players, and they have a chance to do good things. Carson Wentz may have stayed in a little too long. They got a good young guy. I think it was a complete different situation than what we had in Miami. Carson Wentz turned over the ball. I'm not saying he couldn't be the quarterback of the future for the Eagles, but he wasn't showing it through most of the season. Now then you see through the season, you say, let's see what our young guy got. Then the last game of the year, you bench him for the third string, who probably hasn't taken a snap all year, and he's wearing 2 gloves and it's freezing. It's like, I don't understand it at all, but all I know is the Washington football team, my team that drafted me, made the playoffs, and you know what? They're going to represent the NFC East.
Bob, questions for Gus?
Hey, Gus, it's always a pleasure to have you on, and I want to take you back to when you got in the league with that Washington team. We were talking earlier in the show, Gus, about offensive-minded coaches, quarterback coaches, quarterback gurus, if you can call them that. And when you came in, you had North Turner as your head coach. Those first few years were very rough. Didn't really turn into team success. But Turner was always known and respected as an incredibly good offensive mind. What did he mean, being your first pro coach, what did he mean to your future success in the league?
That's a great question. I've never had to kind of put that way because I think North Turner was a great mind. I mean, I remember so many times where he knew what the defense was going to do before they knew. So we were calling the right kind of plays. We were, throwing the ball downfield. And I think the what was great about North was we weren't into the kind of 5 yards and live with it. North was into the let's get 25, let's get 20-yard chunks, let's throw the ball downfield. And if it's not there, then let's check it down and take what they give you kind of attitude. Not, and the great thing about Norv was that we wanted to have a great running game. We had Terry Allen, and we had a good line. We ran power and had a fullback, like things that they don't do in the NFL anymore. And that's why, you know, when you guys talk about, you know, I had a great year and had 3,500 yards. You know, you think back in the day when they ran the ball even more, and my sons and I are collecting these. We're doing this whole card collection now, which has been great. And we all sit and do it together. And I collect vintage cards. They like to collect all the new players. And, you know, there's a card with Roger Staubach from the NFC Championship game. And my son goes, Dad, he was like 14 and 19 for like 120 yards. And they won the game. I'm like, that's how football used to be. You know, it wasn't about throwing for 400 yards and trying to win the game that way. But that's why the game has changed. And I think Norv kind of changed. He was right in the middle of all that change. And, you know, he still coached for many years after being in Washington. And he just had a mind for it. He had a mind for calling the plays, knowing when the defense was going to blitz, and putting a great game plan together.
I think you're a good guy to talk about the Dwayne Haskins situation, Gus. We talked a little bit about him. 15 total games there. Not much success on the field. A lot worse off the field. Still a young man. Seems apologetic. What did you think about the situation? What advice would you give him?
Well, I think it was very hard for him to be in the city where he, I've been around the NFL a long time, and there's always people pulling at all your strings, especially in your hometown. I've always wanted to play for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I always did, and I tried several times, but there's a part of me that said, I'm glad I didn't come home. Because it would have been nonstop tickets. Let's go out. Let's do all these things. And I think he's gone through a lot of that. And hopefully, what has happened to him with the Washington football team, has humbled him and made him understand that I can't do those things that I think I should. I can't be influenced by my old friends. I can't, give in to the peer pressure, because I think that attracts us, and that, you know, we're all kind of weak in that way. And if you want to be in the NFL, there's not many people that get second chances. Now, if you're a first round pick like Dwayne Haskins, you will. But other than that, he won't get many more. If he goes out and has a bad game wherever he is next, it's not going to go well for him. So I suggest that he gets away from it. He works really hard, and he acts like, you know what, I don't deserve anything, and I have to work harder than anybody else on this field right now. And that's the only way he's going to pull himself through it.
Gus, it's interesting that you kind of tell that story about getting away from, you know, playing in your hometown and you wanting to play for the Steelers, but maybe it was the best thing not to do that. I just always go back to Dan Marino and, you know, Danny reaching out to the Rooney family and say, you know, Mr. Rooney, don't let me get away. But the Rooney's saying that it was probably the best because of some of the rumors and the things that Dan had to deal with his senior year of college at Pitt, that maybe it was better for Dan to go play somewhere else and not play for the Steelers. Did you ever talk to Dan about that, or any of the quarterbacks like that that had an opportunity to play in their hometowns like yourself? And then ultimately it turning out to probably be the best thing not to do that?
Yeah, I never have really kind of talked about that with any other quarterbacks, because that didn't really happen to me, and I never had that situation come up. But you think about it, and, you know, Dan is a great, way to look at it, because, you know, he was such a star at Pitt, and he was the man. If you think about it, when he was coming out of college, and we all kind of heard about or knew about what happened, you know, what Dan was. I mean, he was the man, and things were different in the, you know, in the 80s than they are now. And, you know, nobody had a cell phone taking pictures back then. So who knows what was going on? But to be in his hometown, I agree with you. I agree with the Rooneys. It probably was the best thing for him to get away and, just kind of figure it out. Away from family, friends, all that. And you know what? Dan was such a superstar. It wouldn't have mattered where he went. He would have been Dan Marino, you know, whether it was in Miami or San Diego or Seattle, it wouldn't have mattered where he went. He would have been Dan Marino. So that's the great thing about him. But it is hard going home. I mean, even when I played against the Steelers, when I've come home against the Steelers, your phone is, you know, people are calling you. People are asking for tickets. Can I go to the game? Can I do this? And, you know, when are you going to be in town? So it is hard, and you have to learn to deal with those things, and you have to be immature about it.
I guess I want to get your thoughts on the Washington football team. It's hard not to say Redskins. Washington football team getting into the playoffs.
I do it all the time.
I know. Defense looks really good, you know, and we saw how well they played, you know, when they played the Steelers a month ago, and they have certainly played really, really well over the last seven games, only averaging giving up 13 a game, 5-2 over the last seven. Is this a defense? Is this a team that could give Tom Brady and the Bucs a really hard time come Saturday night?
Well, I think the only way that the Washington football team has a chance, there's two things I think. They have to get to Tom Brady. They can't go through the game without any sacks or any pressures. They have to put him on his butt. They have to hit him, and they have to get to him. If they don't, Brady will pick him. And the second thing is Alex Smith. You know, if he when he plays, he has to have a tremendous game. He has to be really, really good. And, you know, he can't take big sacks. He can't do certain things that have happened to him this year. And we all know that what he's doing is incredible. But, you know, people tend to forget about that stuff when you're trying to win a playoff game. And he has to be incredible in this game for them to win. He has some really good players around him. And he's been in these situations before. He's played a long time. And he has to have a great game. So I think their defense has to get to Tom, put him on his butt, and I think that Alex Smith has to have a great game.
Gus, I want to get back to your podcast again, Huddle Up with Gus. Tremendous, by the way. And it's in this month's Podcast Magazine's Hot 50 list. Congratulations for making the Hot 50.
Yeah, we're like running neck and neck.
I know, which is great. I love that. I listened to one of your recent episodes with Matthew McConaughey, and I learned that he's a Washington football team fan, and, you know, he grew up liking them, and as a kid that grew up outside of Dallas, I'm sure that wasn't very popular, and a guy that went to the University of Texas. What are some of the things that you learned about Matthew, and you guys have apparently been friends for years? Anything new that you learned or you want to share with our audience about your conversation with him?
Well, you know, one of the funniest things that he said was he saw me dunk with two hands when he came to the facility
yes.
one day. And I said, you got to be kidding me. I think you saw somebody else do that. That wasn't me. But he said, no, it was you. I know it was you. I saw you do it. So it was kind of funny that he said that. But, you know, Matthew is just an amazing person. You know, when you saw him, his energy, his kind of enthusiasm for the team is incredible. When he comes in the facility or at the game, I didn't know that, you know, he had a jar, a mason jar full of dirt from old RFK Stadium. I don't even have that. I don't have anything from RFK. I wish I did. You know, that was my favorite place to play in all the stadiums I've ever played in the NFL. But, you know, and, you know, the other thing I didn't know about Matthew was that, you know, he left and was an exchange student. His story about going to Australia and being an exchange student was amazing to me. And it probably humbled him, gave him so much passion to do what he did in his life and moved him forward. And so, you know, he was just open. It was great to catch up with him, and his book Green Lights is amazing. I like listening to it because he has one of those voices that you can just listen to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He just does such a editing or talking about the book when he is reading it. Because the book is about, there's little notations in it. There's all kind of little pages. He takes pictures of, you know, all these notes that he's taken over all these years about his life. And it's just so easy to listen to. It's even a great read. So his book Green Lights was awesome. And just hearing about him going out into the desert and writing this book, and, you know, it's just an amazing story. He was a great guest He's a good guy, and it was just such a pleasure to be able to sit down and chat with him for an hour.
Bob, one more for Gus.
Yeah, Gus, my final question was about RFK Stadium. I wanted to ask, you know, I went back to the 70s, Gus, when, you know, you had Kilmer and Sonny Jurgensen, then they became the Art Monk era and the Hogs and everything. And it was, that place was electric. Now, whether you watched it on TV or you were there, I was there once. But you said it was your favorite place to play. Tell us why, and did you get a real good feeling about the history when you got there?
Yeah, I mean, growing up, obviously I wasn't a Washington football team fan. I mean, I was a Steelers fan. I grew up in Pittsburgh. But when I got there and learned about them and got to go play in that stadium, it's this old place by the Armory in D.C., and you drive there and you're like, where are we? You don't know where you are. It's like, you know, and I'm young. I'm like 24 years old. I'm trying to figure this out. And you go in that stadium and it's a packed house and you got the Hoggets and you got the band wearing all their gear and you got just the stadium is packed. Then we're just incredible fans. And when you're getting in and you're playing and you're getting going and you see Monty Coleman stand up on the bench and he's waving this towel and you see the fans going crazy. And then all of a sudden the bleachers start bouncing because those bleachers could move in and out because it's a baseball stadium and the fans would just make them bounce. And like you said, Bob, it was just something electric. It was just something so incredible that I got to play in front of all those people and be the Washington football team's quarterback for a bit in history was just amazing to me.
Gus, before we let you go, remind our listeners again all the places that they can go to listen to your podcast and then what you're doing now as well.
Well, you're not going to ask me about my spaghetti recipe?
Oh, we'll always
do. Well, if you got one, please share.
I don't put bones and all that stuff in it like Mr. Luke did. But everybody can find me at huddleupwithgus.com. They can check me out on social media at Gus Rod or at huddleupwithgus. I have both. They can listen to me, our podcast, wherever they listen to their favorite podcast. It's been a great time. We got some great guests. My sons are interviewing Ryan Fitzpatrick tomorrow, and I'm going to be interviewing Matt Burke for a future show. So he's an old friend of mine. He was my center in Minnesota. He won a Super Bowl with the Ravens. So I'll have Matt Burke on. But it's just been a pleasure that we've been able to do this and bring some great stories to people out there. And I want to thank everyone. I want to thank you guys for always helping me on social media and sharing it. Hopefully next month I'll be a little higher than you guys on the podcast magazine top 50.
A little friendly wager there. All right, that's fine. We'll keep it going, my friend. I mean, look, you're fantastic. We love you, and you know that you're one of our all time favorites here on the show, and your podcast is absolutely spectacular. So, you know, we love plugging not only the show, but we just love plugging you because. A finer human being we haven't met. We're privileged to know you and call you a friend. We can't thank you enough for how generous you have been with your time and coming in and being a part of this show and sharing your stories. You're fantastic.
Well, thank you, Chris and Bob, and I appreciate you guys. And anytime you need me, love to talk football and love to talk old stories and playing for 15 years. I got a lot of them. So, hopefully I didn't bore you guys tonight. Hopefully, it was, and I wish you guys all the best and we'll do it again some Thursday night.
Yeah. Looking forward to it. You're fantastic. Stay safe. All the best to you and your family. We look forward to catching up again soon, Gus.
Happy New Year, fellas.
Bye-bye.
Same to you. See you, Gus. That's the great Gus Verratt. And I tell you, Bob, that interview that he did with Matthew McConaughey was fantastic. I mean, McConaughey, and the stories that he shared, folks, I can't recommend Gus's show highly enough to you. Again, huddleupwithgus.com. But I don't remember exactly how long the interview was. I think he said a little over an hour, with Matthew, but, the guy was, as forthcoming as you could be. And as Gus talked about, Bob, I mean, he went out to the desert and wrote his, you know, took note. He's got notes from his life and, you know, over, you know, it wasn't just 50 straight days, but in, you know, about 15 day chunks, went out there and wrote his life story. And, it's a fantastic listen. I've started to listen to that as well on top of listening to the interview, but, great stuff from Gus. I'll tell you, what a great guy.
Hey, sure is, Chris. And, you know, he was a great athlete and he's really combined. As you can tell, he's a very polished guy, very intelligent man. And, you know, we were there when he first started all this stuff into the, podcasting and everything. And, he's been very thankful for what we've been able to, plug for him and vice versa. And, great guy. And there's a reason why he's in our show's Hall of Fame. But, I was getting goosebumps when he was talking about RFK and so is he. And that shows you how special a place that was.
Yeah, no doubt. Absolutely. Good for you for having the opportunity to go actually see a football game there. That's a heck of a thing. So anyway, we look forward to catching up with Gus. He's a great guy. HuddleWithGus.com. His podcast is a special thing. All right. When Bob and I come back, we'll be turning on our Thursday night tailgate spotlight on the positive. You're going to hear two more great stories about guys out there doing great things in their community. We'll do that on the other side of this real quick station break.
Thursday Night Tailgate, where the spotlight is always on the positive. Tune in Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time to hear your favorite NFL legends, players, and coaches sharing their stories. Now back to Chris and Bob.
I wouldn't joke about anything else that happened to you tonight.
All right, we are back here on Thursday Night Tailgate, firing up our spotlight on the positive. Bob, who are you putting your spotlight on this week?
Well, Chris, as we continue rummaging through our NFL Walter Payton man of the year, I should say, as far as all those candidates who are out there now that we really got to give shout-outs to, it's almost like we can pick one at random. But I came across the Tennessee Titans candidate this year is safety Kevin Byard. And, you know, this guy's got a terrific history, Chris. He came out of Middle Tennessee, had a great career there as a safety. But was not invited to the NFL Combine, kind of passed over, and he was just an incredible, had an incredible final year there and just broke all their records on defense. But so when he got to the NFL, he had a kind of a chip on his shoulder, and my goodness, he's done so incredibly well. There's only been a few guys who've had more interceptions since they came in the league, and he's played every game for 5 years, Chris. Has not missed a game. And so obviously he was an all pro in 2017. He continues to do incredible things on the field, but off the field is where he finally got recognized this year. He and his wife is named Clark. They established the Byard Family Legacy Fund. And basically it's just providing help to so many different people who need it. He's been a spokesman for the United Way of Nashville, Chris. But his whole emphasis this year obviously is on school kids, and because of the distance learning, what he did this year was he personally packed and distributed more than 300 distance learning kits for these kids who needed it. Now these include things like backpacks and hygiene stuff, Chris, and actually sporting goods for those kids that liked it. He actually delivered them to their door. You know, and he's been very, very instrumental with the tornado cleanup down there, what they had, you know, last spring. And he just continues to do everything the right way. He does Zoom meetings every week with kids and their parents, talking about, you know, different issues of race and things like that. He works closely with the Metro Nashville PD on police relations down there. And he also does something really good for cancer research. He calls it his 31 Tackle Challenge. Like some other guys we've mentioned in the past, fans can pledge monetary amounts for every tackle he makes. And he's been one of the best tacklers in the league, especially the last couple years. So he's made an awful lot of money for these charities. And, you know, he does, I mean, COVID is kind of curtailed some of the activities, but he normally would host at least four major programs every year, and their football camps and their, deliveries and all kinds of, things that would, help with financial assistance to, people that are really down in their luck. So he gets it, Chris. You know, again, I'm glad that we can still watch him play this coming week as they're in the playoffs, but I just hope people realize what kind of man he is off the field. So kudos to Kevin Byard, safety of the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, absolutely. What a great story. Rooting hard for that guy this weekend. So thanks for sharing that one, Bob. I'm putting my spotlight this week on Vikings quarterback Kirk Cousins and his wife, Julie. Their foundation made a donation to People Serving People in the shelter up there in the Twin Cities. And it's a shelter for people who have become homeless and trying to get, you know, their lives back on track. But their donation allowed the parents of the family staying there to go out and buy Christmas presents, you know, for those for their children. 60 families living there currently, and their donation allowed each of those parents to have the autonomy to go out and buy their children whatever presents, you know, their kids wanted. The shelter arranged to take the parents to a local store where they could pick out, you know, what the parents knew the children wanted for Christmas. You know, unfortunately, due to COVID, you know, Kirk and his wife, Julie, were, you know, forced to join the family's Christmas celebration virtually. They couldn't go down to the shelter and be there in person. But they got to witness the, you know, the kids unwrapping the gifts and hearing them thank their parents for those gifts. Kurt, you know, said, you know, hey, it was fun for Julie and I to participate, you know, in a small way to be able to sit back and watch, you know, truly blessed, you know, to, you know, give then to receive and to watch the joy in the children's faces as they opened their presents and thanked their parents. That was a real treat for both Kurt and Julie. And it's not the first time, Bob, that the cousins have partnered with People Serving People. Last year, they hosted a Halloween party for the families at the Twin Cities Orthopedics Performance Center. Kurt said they were honored, you know, to be able to help that organization, to help families that have, you know, come across some hard times and needed someone to step in and help provide support and help put a roof over their heads and help the parents, you know, put smiles on the faces of their children, you know, at Christmas time. You know, kids, you know, don't really understand what's going on in those sort of situations. They just know it's Christmas time. And Santa's supposed to come and you know, he and Julie were able to help make that a reality. So kudos to Kurt and Julie Cousins for making a big positive impact on the lives of 60 families this Christmas up there in the Twin Cities. Thought that was another great story, Bob.
Sure. I mean, the Cousins, as you know, Kirk is very well paid, Chris. And again, a lot of these guys, they don't have to do these type of things. They could just sit back on their laurels and watch the money come in and everything. So it does take a guy that really cares to really get out there and reach people like he does. Again, and that's why we bring these guys up at the end of the show, because it should leave a good taste in everybody's mouth and make these people out there listening want to do similar things.
Man, that's a great point, Bob. And that's, you know, to your point, we say this a lot. That's why we do these right at the end, so that we end on a really, really high note and letting people know that, you know, we talk about the knucklehead stuff from time to time. We try not to spend much time on that. But you end the show on a bright note and let folks know that these guys are out there doing great things. These guys and their families are out there doing great things, and the impact that they have is really rewarding to us. So, again, kudos to Kurt and Julie Cousins, and to Kevin Baird as well for being you know, great citizens in their community. So thanks to both or all of those. All right, my friend, it's time for us to put a bow on this episode of Thursday Night Tailgate. We send out our thanks again to Victor Green, John Luke, and Gus Ferrat for being a part of the show tonight. And as always, Bob, I can't thank you enough for sharing your Thursday nights with me.
Yeah, it's always my pleasure too, Chris. We were very fortunate to have three of our best friends join us tonight. So that was a special one, and I look forward to doing it next week.
Absolutely. And scheduled to join us next week are going to be former Bills and Steelers linebacker Arthur Motes. Looking forward to having Arthur on for the first time. Did a wonderful video for us for our 9th anniversary. You can find it on our website, ThursdayNightTailgate.com. Very energetic guy. So really looking forward to having Arthur as part of the show. As John Luke said a little earlier tonight, former heavyweight boxer Jerry Cooney going to be back with us. Looking forward to catching up with Jerry. He's got a wonderful book out. Check that out on Amazon.com. And a long-awaited return visit from Colts defensive line coach Brian Baker. So we're looking forward to having Brian as part of the show. Now, we know the Colts are in the playoffs, and we may have to juggle around Brian's schedule depending on the outcome of the game this coming week. But we've got Brian scheduled for this week. If they happen to win, we may have to reschedule to a little bit later on. But Brian's been a wonderful friend of the show going way back to when we started out. So yeah, I think he first joined us very early on in 2012. So looking forward to catching back up with Brian. Of course, Tony Collins, hopefully he'll be back with us next week for our 5-star picks of the week. Bob, got a text from Tony. Overslept. Fell asleep. He's like, yeah, hey, getting old, fellas. Fell asleep. So Tony's sleeping on the couch, but we got his pick. So we'll make that a part of the segment next week, but look forward to catching up with Tony as well. And obviously, we hope everybody listening will come back and be a part of the show and join us as well. On social media, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at CT Mascaro. Bob is at Bob_Lazzeri. The show is at TNT Podcast. You can also visit us on Facebook. We've got a page for the show, Thursday Night Tailgate, plus Bob and I have our own Facebook pages as well. Check us out online, ThursdayNightTailgate.com. On there, you'll be able to keep up to date with what our guest schedule looks like. Plus, we've got the links to the show, so you'll be able to stream. If you've got, you know, the 2 hours, you'll be able to stream a whole show. Or if you want to break the show up into segments, whether that's, you know, on your commutes or whatnot, you can listen to your favorite individual segments on there and on your favorite podcasting sites as well. You can find us on Apple Podcast, Radio.com, TuneIn, Player.fm. We are at Podbean. We're all over the net. So if you've got a favorite podcasting site, you're likely to find us on there. And like Gus and I were talking about, Podcast Magazine, can't thank those guys enough for supporting this show, as well as me on the golf side next on the tee. And then, like I say, Gus is Huddle Up with Gus. We made it into their Hot 50 list. So if you don't mind, folks, we certainly appreciate your support. Go on to podcastmagazine.com. You can vote in their Hot 50 list every month. You can pick up the 3 podcasts. So we would certainly appreciate your support and the support of Augusta's show as well. Bob, take us home, my friend.
Okay, Chris, I look forward to next week. And again, a pleasant 2021 to everyone out there. We also want to thank our terrific announcer, Joe Lajanusa, for the wonderful job he always does with our intro and our ads. We also want to thank Kyle Turley and the Kyle Turley Band for the upcoming outro music. On behalf of myself and Chris, we want to thank everyone out there tonight for listening. We appreciate you the most. Until next week, good night, Kevin, good night, Terry, and good night, Rusty. We miss you guys.